Welcome back to Word on the Hills with me, Felicity Sidnell-Reed, my co-host, Gwyn Scheltemer, and our guest this week, Alan Bland. Alan, I know you have at least three novels already written. Have you sent them to a publisher, or are you looking for an agent?
I did send one of them out many years ago, and I've started sending them out again. So far, not with any success, but I will keep going at it until I get there.
Good, good. One does have to have determination in these matters, doesn't one? I remember when I was teaching, I and a friend wrote two mystery novels, which we sent out, and even got a slight amount of interest, though not an acceptance. And then, you know, life as a teacher took over, and one gave it up. But, of course, when one's retired, one's supposed to have the time, to do all these things and keep at it. So maybe it's your time.
Well, I hope so. I'm only semi-retired, so maybe I'll be semi-successful.
These days, though, self-publishing has become very popular and respectable. Would you consider self-publishing?
I would now. A few years ago, definitely not, because it did seem to have an aura of, I don't know what the word is, like failed writers who are desperate to get something out there, and it's
vanity press.
Vanity press, thank you, yes.
Yes. It's cast off that character, though, I think.
Yeah, I think so too, yes.
But it's a lot of work.
That's what I'm worried about.
Yes. You've spoken to business groups and written a short article on writing clear prose. But do you think there's a difference in style when writing for business purposes and writing fiction?
Definitely, yes. Sure. Writing for fiction, you can bring fact into it to support the fiction. But writing non-fiction, you cannot bring fiction into it to support that writing. unless you want to get into a serious trouble.
Well, I guess you have to keep your purpose in mind. But what do you try to achieve with your words when you're writing fiction?
Fiction, really to entertain. I prefer light fiction, something with some comedy in it. I've also written some darker pieces and some procedurals, police procedurals. But I find I get more fun out of writing send-up pieces and light comedy.
Mm-hmm. Well, that should sell well.
I hope so.
So, Alan, you yourself come from England.
Yes, I grew up there and left when I was 22.
And have been here ever since. But you set your novels, or the novel you're going to read to us anyway, in England. Are they all set there?
No, two have been, and some of the short stories, but I've also sort of spread it out across North America, some set in the States and some in Canada.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Do you feel more at home with a story that's set in England?
In a way, I do. I think my writing tends to favor the style of writing that the Brits do, mm-hmm. rather than the North American style of more direct and sensationalist kind of thriller writers.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Please read us another excerpt from your work.
Okay, I'm going to read from a novel called Snafu. And when I write my novels, I tend to find a title that has a musical connection. And Snafu is a piece of music that was written by Louis Armstrong.
Mm-hmm.
Snafu is also the acronym for Situation Normal, All Effed Up. But my hero in the story is Sir Nigel Ainsley Forbes Unwin, whose initials are S-N-A-F-U. So he too is a snafu. So, in the home counties around London, most of the citizens slept. Others had work that kept them awake as the rest of the populace slumbered. Some were intent on criminal activities, while others tried to catch them. In a Tudor-style mansion on the south bank of the River Thames, and a respectable distance from the city, one of its occupants slept on, while the other did not. Sir Nigel Ainsley Forbes Unwin was unable to sleep. He lay first on his right side, but that made the arthritis in his right hip start to throb. Then he rolled onto his left side, but that brought him almost nose to nose with Lady Marjorie. Marjorie, he thought wistfully. Why the bloody hell did I ever marry that bloody Marjorie? Except, at the time, of course, she was pregnant, and her father, the Colonel, had threatened to kill him if he didn't. There was always that reason, of course. With the full moon lighting the bedroom, he lay there contemplating Marjorie for several minutes, as she snored back at him in what he decided was a most reproachful manner. Just bloody look at her, he thought. Face covered in wrinkle cream and hair in bloody curlers. He heaved his not inconsiderable bulk onto its back and stared up at the ornate plasterwork in the Robert Adams ceiling. The depiction of cherubic angels softened his countenance, and soon, gazing up at the chubby little bums above his head, his mind wandered off in a new direction as he remembered the chubby little bum of his mistress, Gwendolyn. For several pleasant minutes he thought of Gwendolyn until his fertile imagination ran out of combinations of him and Gwendolyn writhing in ecstasy and in ways that would have challenged a contortionist. The erection that he thought was happening subsided as fast as it had come, and when he furtively checked to see if it had been real, it was gone. That started him thinking about Gwendolyn anew, only in a different way. What was he going to do about her? Today was Sunday, March the 1st, and in 42 days, April the 11th at 5 p.m. to be precise, he would be retiring from his underwriting position with the Snodgrass and Forbes Unwin Insurance Syndicate at Lloyd's of London. With the last few years' profits not coming up to expectation, that is, that the expectation that there would be some profits, he knew that economies would have to be made. Gwendolyn was definitely not an economy model, as, just like an exotic car, her upkeep and maintenance were not cheap. Sir Nigel's mind slipped away on a new tangent as he considered both her performance and mileage. Although she was undemanding when it came to gifts, for example, the expense of her upkeep was still quite considerable. She certainly was a racy little number, but the Mews townhouse where she was garaged cost him a pretty penny to maintain. He stopped and thought back. Garaged? Surely I didn't think that. Must be bloody losing it. Yes, Gwendolyn, as lovely as she was, would have to go. That last car that he had agreed to buy her, thrust upon her, in fact, had cost £24,000, not to mention the new fur coats that she wouldn't freeze driving around with the top down. He sighed. It was so hard to say no to Gwendolyn. Even more so when he had been handcuffed to the brass bed in his Bayswater townhouse and dressed in a set of ladies' cutaway leather underwear. He thought that Gwendolyn had gone much too far that time, even though she had promised to give him the photographs. She never had. Continuing his ruminations, he realized that £24,000 was £1,000 for each of the years between their ages. His underwriter's mind had begun to wander, and he calculated that this must equate to the rate of a mistress in insurance terms. The rate of premium was £1,000 per year of exposure against the risk of a catastrophic loss if the worst happened. That is, if Lady Marjorie ever find out about their liaison. Sir Nigel's ruminations continued and began to gather momentum. Even if he could find a way to retire dear sweet Gwendolyn, he couldn't see spending his own retirement without some kind of diversion, or could he? It would certainly ease the pressure on his finances if she was gone and not replaced with a more economical model. He sneaked a quick look at Marjorie, who had now added drooling to her stentorian snoring, and decided that it would only be fair to take his rather interesting libidinous fantasies and to share them with someone new and equally sympathetic. Someone more tolerant than Marjorie had ever been, as, after their first furtive and untimely consummation in the back of his father's Morris trade van, which had resulted in both their early wedding and the birth of their only child, Giles, there hadn't been much action on the sexual front. In fact, there hadn't been any action at all, as Marjorie had sworn that she wasn't going through that dog's breakfast again for anything. His thoughts returned to despair as he considered Giles, who was now 41 years old and still studying botany in some university in North Wales.
we... 41 and still studying botany.
<Yeah. laughs>
What a way to prepare for the world.
Uh-huh.
Well, many thanks, Alan, and good luck with finding a publisher for your novels.
Thank you.
To connect with us, please send comments, queries, or suggestions for whom we might interview in future programs to our email, wordonthehills897@gmail.com, or connect with us at our website, www.wordonthehills.com, where all these programs are archived and available to listeners at any time and from anywhere. Thanks for tuning in. We hope you'll join us for another program next week.